former Chicago doctor, now charged with murdering his wife.
Her husband told responding officers she was ejected from their car, but no autopsy was done. Today, outside court, the prosecutor said he killed her to collect $125,000 in life insurance. Her death certificate stating the cause back then, a fractured cervical spine.
He is 73 years old and now charged with the murder of his wife in suburban Chicago more than 40 years ago. Now, Rudd was an attorney. He lost his license in Illinois under a cloud of fraud allegations. And according to his website, he has been living in Texas. At the time, she was only 19, and our source tells us Noreen had been married to Donnie for less than a month when the couple was involved in a single car crash. Coroner's report said Noreen died from a fractured spine and trauma after being thrown from the car. But Donnie apparently walked away unharmed. Shortly before her death, he took out a $100,000 life insurance policy on his wife, and questions have been swirling ever since. In 2013, authorities exhumed Noreen's body from a cemetery in Dundee. Another autopsy confirmed the suspicions that Noreen was killed, and now Rudd is charged with her murder. Authorities have had their eyes on Donnie Rudd for a very long time because he was also named a suspect in the 1991 death of one of his clients. She's Loretta Terry Tabor. He has not been charged in that case.
Donnie Rudd was a no-show in court today. His attorney says he is here in the Chicago area, hospitalized with a serious medical condition. When he gets to court, he plans on entering a not guilty plea.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Good evening.
And our episode tonight is The Devil Inside, The Unraveling of Donnie Rudd. So this is a fascinating story of a guy just unbelievable. So I hope that you'll enjoy this. It's a little bit different than what we usually do, but I found it fascinating. So Donnie met his first wife, Lou Ann, while he was a student at Texas A&M University in the chemical engineering program. Lou Ann was a student at A&M's sister college, Texas Women's University. Lou Ann was 19 when she met Donnie on a blind date. They were engaged to be married within a few months. When Lou Ann started questioning her decision to marry Donnie so quickly, he threatened to drive off of a bridge. So this was just a glimpse of the craziness that would define Donnie Rudd in his future years. So before we get into the story, let's hear Dick's beer review.
So tonight's beer is a beer from Illinois, because that's where the alleged crime took place. And I chose one of my favorites. It's called Bourbon County Brand Coffee Stout, brewed by Goose Island Beer Company in Chicago. So this is an American Double or Imperial Stout, which, as I've said before, is kind of modeled after Russian Imperial Stout. Many of these stouts are barrel-aged in either bourbon or whiskey barrels. Some are infused with coffee or chocolate. Alcohol ranges vary, but they tend to be on the bigger side for alcohol. And they tend to be sweet and very full-bodied. So Bourbon County Brand Coffee Stout fulfills both promises. Bourbon barreled, aged, and coffee infused.
I like a beer that will keep its promises.
Well, like many things. So this is a dark black beer with a tan head. Very strong coffee aroma, a little bit of booze, a little bit of chocolate. The taste is where it really shines. Very wonderful, enticing combination of espresso coffee, bourbon, dark chocolate, and vanilla. Just a wonderful, wonderful beer. So it's a big boy stout. It's 13.4%. I'd put it in the world class of beerdom.
All right. Thank you. Great review.
Okay, Jill, let me take you down to the dark, quiet end of the bar, where we can talk about Donnie.
Sounds like a good idea. So Donnie Rudd, he married his first wife, Lou Ann, in a small ceremony in Dallas, Texas. This was near Lou Ann's family home. He had graduated from Texas A&M with a degree in chemical engineering, and he claimed to be his high school class salutatorian, only behind his twin brother, Ronnie. He also claimed to be... You wanted to say something about Ronnie?
I would just wonder, this is an aside.
Okay.
Who would name their twin boys Donnie and Ronnie?
Maybe it was Donald and Ronald.
Or are they Donald and Ronald, which is equally as bad?
I guess the Rudd parents, right. Mr. and Mrs. Yeah. Rudd would do that.
I mean, I think that's just cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, it could be at the root of some of this guy's problems, maybe.
Well, probably not.
Although Ronnie turned out okay.
I mean, it's just, every time you mention the two of them together, I chuckle.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. Now, Donnie also claimed to be the valedictorian of his engineering class at college, which would have been pretty impressive.
It would, yeah. Were it only true.
Right. He easily landed a job as a chemical engineer at the U.S. Gypsum Company, and he moved his wife to Barrington, Illinois. Now, Luann and Donnie had three children. Donnie attended night school then at Chicago Kent College of Law and eventually became an attorney. And he moved into the patent department at Quaker Oats Company after he became an attorney.
So he didn't work that long as a chemical engineer. Or he continued working while he went to law school.
Yeah, I think so.
And then he became a lawyer, and that's where the better money was, I guess.
Yeah, so he couldn't have been stupid.
Well, probably not.
Probably not. But he met the woman who he would leave Luann for while he was in his late 20s. Her name was Diane Hart, and Donnie became friendly with her when they both held positions on the local school board in Barrington, Illinois. But Diane had four children herself, and one of her daughters babysat for the Rudd family.
This is sticky.
Yeah, it gets very weird. Now, when Luann became pregnant with her fourth child, Diane and Luann became friends. The two families belonged to the same church. They attended buffet luncheons together. Although Diane lacked the education that Donnie had, she was just as intelligent. She was a really bright woman. Now, she and Donnie took turns serving as the president of the school district. Their positions required them to do some traveling, which didn't thrill Diane's husband. But the fact that Luann and Diane were friends, that gave him a false sense of security with the situation.
Oh, if only he knew.
Yeah. Now, as the Hart and Rudd family spent more and more time together, as you can imagine, the tensions began to grow within their marriages, especially.
So it became apparent that Donnie and Diane were having an affair.
Yes.
And Diane Hart divorced her husband in August of 1971. This was the beginning of what Diane's daughters refer to as the Donnie years.
Yeah, and I'll just mention there is a book written by two of Diane's daughters about Donnie Rudd, and we'll put that link on our show notes where you can get that book on Amazon. Great book, well written.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a good book.
Mm-hmm.
So Diane was going to be painfully honest when she told her husband she wanted a divorce. She said to him, "Donnie told Luann this afternoon that we want to be together." When in actuality, it was her husband who ended up breaking the news to Luann, because Donnie bailed on that.
Yeah, he was good at that. We'll find out as we go this.
So Donnie apparently stayed at his office that day, didn't even answer the phone, and was apparently relieved to avoid owning up to his actions. Over the next several months of emotional turmoil and upheaval, Donnie seemed to avoid most of the drama. He sat quietly in the background as two marriages imploded, smoking cigarettes, reading books. Accusations and heated discussions moved among the other three participants.
Yeah.
Must have been a really difficult time.
Oh,
plus,
sure.
You've got eight kids involved, too. Four kids on either side.
That's right. So this was weird. And strangely, even more strangely, Diane's husband began a romantic relationship with Luann. And so he ended up moving in with Luann and her four children.
Yeah. So this is basically a spouse swap.
Pretty much. And Donnie moved into the Hart home. So at this point, Donnie began to exhibit some problematic behaviors, as he tended to do once you got to know him. He was determined to portray himself as the one who was caught in a troubled marriage, like it was Luann's fault that they got divorced. That's what he was trying to do.
Like he's the aggrieved husband. He's trying his best to keep this marriage going.
Yeah, so he was trying to make her look bad, and he did weird things. He would go out at night. He'd move her car from where she parked it so she couldn't pick the kids up from school that day. So that would make her look like, you know, a neglectful mom or like she was losing her mind, because when she'd call her husband to come home, then, or maybe she was just living with him at this time, but when she would call the father to come home, the car would be put back. So she would look like she just lost her mind.
She'd look stupid.
Yeah. Yep. And he would let the air out of her tires. He would take mail from her mailbox, so bills would end up getting on not being paid. And he would just do about anything to make Luann's life difficult, which didn't really make any sense because he's the one that left. But he just couldn't let it go at that.
Yeah, but he wasn't very good at owning up to that.
No, he didn't want to own up to anything. So, to avoid confrontation with his parents for leaving Luann, Donnie lied and he told them that he had cancer and was undergoing chemo. He told them the chemo was clouding his mind and his judgment. He actually went as far as to check himself into the hospital.
You can do that?
Well, you could.
Maybe,
I guess in the 70s
maybe
it was easier.
Maybe back in the 70s you could say, I'm sick, I need to be hospitalized.
Sure. And now it was in 1973, while he's in this relationship with Diane Hart, he's 31 years old, and he begins a relationship with this 19-year-old.
Right, and he's not married to Diane. He is divorced from Luann.
Yeah, and he's living with Diane.
And he's living with Diane, but they haven't tied the knot.
Correct, yes. So after a few months of juggling both of these relationships, Donnie told Diane that he had to go to Mexico. He had to do a mission for the CIA, because...
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah.
Is that the first time we've heard of the CIA?
No, I think he'd said things like that to her before.
Okay, so he's a spy.
But as we're going to learn, this Diane Hart was just very forgiving. She put up with more than anybody in their right mind would.
I think that's a charitable way of putting it.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
Now, he married the 19-year-old Noreen the next day when he said he was going to Mexico on this trip. So while living with Diane and her children... he'd actually been making guest lists, he'd been choosing a wedding cake, and he made honeymoon reservations for Noreen and himself. But he actually did go to Mexico, though, but it wasn't for the mission, it was for his honeymoon with Noreen.
Well, maybe that was a secret CIA mission.
To get married?
No, Maureen was his accomplice.
Oh, well.
I'm being facetious.
I know you are. So it was less than a month after this wedding that Donnie called Diane with shocking news. Noreen was dead.
Whoa.
Yeah. She died in a car accident, Donnie said. And the details of the accident were really bizarre. So I don't know how Diane believed this. I mean, she was really taken with this man for some reason.
Yeah, well, it's easy to say in hindsight she's way too gullible in believing. Because this just gets weirder and weirder.
Yeah, I don't think she did believe it all. I think she let a lot of it go.
So in September of 1973, police responded to a call reporting a motor vehicle accident on Route 62 in Barrington Hills, Illinois.
Okay.
It's the area where everybody lived.
Sure.
When police arrived, the Pinto wagon was located in a grassy area. Donnie was sitting in the passenger seat with a mortally wounded Noreen lying across him with her head in his lap. Her feet were in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
The police pulled Noreen out of the car, began mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. She wasn't breathing. One of the officers noted that the back of Noreen's skull appeared to be gone.
Yeah.
Smashed. She was taken to the hospital where she was pronounced dead. So, furthermore, the police noted that the weather was clear. There was about 165 feet of skid marks in the grass heading to the Pinto.
Yeah, so there was no other car involved.
No, not...
There wasn't bad weather.
No.
No.
The car just appeared to have... hit a barbed wire fence and only had minor damage.
Right.
Donnie, on the other hand, said that another car had run them off the road. He said that as they left the road, the passenger door came open. Noreen was thrown from the car. He pointed to a rock that had blood and hair on it near the car and suggested that this was what had killed Noreen.
Well, I bet that is what killed Noreen.
Yeah, but not because she was ejected from the car.
No. How would she be ejected out the side of the car? Very unbelievable. Right. I think if this happened more recently, it wouldn't have gone. I don't know how he got away with that.
I don't know either. Because that story just doesn't hold.
No. No, a witness from the funeral home actually remembered the extensive damage to Noreen's skull. But no autopsy was performed, and the death was just labeled as an accident. So I don't know if this was because he was an attorney and they found him believable. I don't know how that happened, but it did. And Donnie returned to Diane's home and her bed, and that was the very same week of Noreen's funeral that he did that. Now, he received life insurance payouts totaling $120,000 from two policies that were taken out on Noreen, and he and Diane married in 1974, less than a year after his marriage to Noreen. So this is his third marriage.
Right. I guess you don't count the one to Noreen because it lasted less than a month.
Oh, I still count it. I still count it.
Donnie didn't.
No. I don't think he counted anything. So they sold Diane's house and they bought two townhouses right next to each other. Diane's children at this time were 11, 14, 15, and 17 years old. And Donnie was not interested in being a parent. So Diane and Donnie lived in one townhouse and the children lived in the other. And they eventually hired a carpenter to build a door between the two homes.
Man, that's so bizarre.
It's very bizarre.
And meanwhile, Donnie's kids are with
Luann,
the other family.
Well, his ex-wife and Diane's ex-husband.
Yeah.
Yep.
But there was intermingling too, right? I mean, different kids would be at different places all the
time. Oh, sure.
Time.
Yeah. They were in the same school district. Yeah. So.
I can't comprehend that.
Yeah. So Donnie and Diane, they locked their side, though, when they went to work in the morning so the kids couldn't get into that side. And they also locked it at night when they went to bed. So very bizarre, and I don't understand it in the least.
Not at all.
No. But Donnie did become well-known in Chicago. He was an expert in condominium law. And in the late 1980s, he represented a group of clients that were involved in a failed real estate transaction. Now, a luxury condominium project, the Whitehall, it was a $17 million development, and it involved converting a former seminary into luxury condos. It was located in the upscale community of Oak Ridge, Illinois. Now, multiple people invested in this project. It was huge, and it included several high-profile Chicago businessmen. And when the financing bank failed in the savings and loan crisis in the 80s, Whitehall Development entities went bankrupt. Donnie went ahead and filed a motion for summary judgment without serving the motion to the defendants. So he's representing these clients. And even though the bank had gone bankrupt and there was no way they were getting any money, he went ahead and filed it without telling the defendants that they were being filed against. So it wasn't a valid filing.
Right.
Which made no sense.
He did that so that if there was any money to be had, he'd collect it.
I don't think so. I think he just did it to make the people think he was helping them. Because there was no money to be had. But it got him in some trouble.
Well, how could you think he was helping them if he didn't notify them? He just did it.
No, he didn't notify the defendants. The people he was representing, he told that he was doing it for.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then he entered an order granting a judgment on behalf of his clients against the defendants, even though the defendants were never served and they'd been protected in the bankruptcy court. So for almost 2 years, Donnie...
See why we love lawyers?
I know, right? Well, I don't think he represents most lawyers. Let's not do that to lawyers. Now, it was for almost 2 years that Donnie's clients believed that they had more than $1 million coming to them, but there was no actual record of a motion or a monetary award. So even if Donnie had properly served the complaint for his clients, the bankruptcy filings would have prevented any proceedings.
Which he should have known.
I'm sure he knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Whitehall case became increasingly problematic for Donnie, as he told them time after time a check would be delivered. Well, of course, eventually one of the investors retained another lawyer, and the court files were checked, and the jig was up on this deal.
He's found out.
Yep. So while he's trying to do damage control, his oblivious law partner had been working on renovations for their offices. He had no idea. And it was Donnie's wife, Diane, who helped him out of the mess he created, as always. Diane dealt with the angry clients, the shocked law partner, and Donnie checked himself into a hospital again, claiming he was seriously ill.
So that we're seeing a pattern emerge here.
Yes.
Whenever things get tough, Donnie gets hospitalized.
He does.
Or he's dying of something. Or
yeah.
Some horrible thing.
So much craziness, yes. He didn't take any calls while he was in the hospital. Now, the fact that he'd filed the fraudulent court orders in the name of his law firm meant that his partner was jointly responsible, so his partner dissolved their partnership and filed a lawsuit for his half of the liabilities.
Good thinking.
So then Diane filed for divorce from Donnie, mainly to extricate herself from his debts and his liabilities.
Also good thinking.
Yeah, that's one thing she did that did make some sense that she got herself out of that financial, but she didn't really divorce him and leave him. So
right, she didn't.
No, she still was with him. So I don't know.
So Donnie's in pretty deep financial straits here.
Yes.
He filed for bankruptcy, which included over $7 million in claims. Wow. From the Whitehall investors and his law partner.
Right.
His debts were discharged. Good old bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And he was free to rebuild his finances. The investors and former law partner walked away with nothing. While the bankruptcy proceedings stopped litigation against him, the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission proceeded with multiple ethical violation claims against Donnie.
Sure.
Wonder why.
Yeah.
With the threat of having his license to practice law revoked, Donnie again checked himself into a hospital, this time a mental hospital.
He did.
His ex-wife, Diane, worked hard to defend him. He received an official mental health diagnosis of manic depressive disorder. He was put on medication and pronounced cured, but the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission then decided not to take action against him. So he skated again.
So once again, he'd walked away virtually unscathed from the destruction that he'd created, and he continued to practice law. He lived with his ex-wife, and he had income sufficient to live a comfortable upper-middle-class life, so he really hadn't lost anything as far as his lifestyle went. So his violations, his bankruptcy, and his divorce really had no significant effect on his life. He just took up where he left off with his clients and with women, and Mr. Condo, as he liked to call himself, he actually had a license plate that said Mr. Condo on it. He was back in business. So the ARDC case had a clear warning, though. They didn't take his law license away, but they did warn him that if he returned with another similar charge, all of the dismissed charges from this would be reinstated, and he'd never be able to practice law again. So,
okay.
So he did have a warning there. So he was in the clear as long as he didn't lie to any client, as long as he didn't manufacture court orders, and as long as he filed all of his cases in a timely manner. So that sounds fairly simple. That doesn't seem like a really hard thing to do.
It doesn't, although he's got a proven track record.
Yeah, I think it's a very complicated thing for him to do. This is a man with no conscience, really, and he's never been held accountable. And it was just a matter of time before the trouble would return.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So as soon as his case was dismissed, he stopped seeing the psychiatrist and he quit taking his meds. The diagnosis to him had just been another tool to get what he wanted, to help him beat the system.
Sure.
Now, according to some people who knew Donnie at this time, the dismissal of the disciplinary charges made him even more energetic, as if he felt that he was somehow above rules and laws, and it made him actually feel like he was invincible. So he kind of got a kick out of it.
Yeah, I can see that. He scored like a triple victory there.
Yeah. Now, he threw himself into affairs with no thought of consequences as well. Many of his relationships were with clients. Diane knew that Donnie was a serial philanderer, but for whatever reason, she chose to look the other way. And he didn't have casual one-night stands, though, like you might expect, because he had no difficulty seducing women. He portrayed himself as a wealthy widower, and he even became engaged. Now, he lied about being a war hero and a wounded veteran. He expressed no regret or sadness when he was found out. He was just content to let Diane deal with the women and the crises that he caused. Diane dealt with crying women calling on the phone, thinking that they were engaged to be married to him, and just finding out that he wasn't living alone, that he wasn't wealthy and all this.
So during this time, a woman named Loretta Tabak-Botke, who became a client of Donnie's, Diane had introduced her to him.
Right.
He represented her in a business disagreement with her former partner in an interior design company. Now, Loretta, who apparently was an attractive model, former model, when she separated from her husband, Diane believed that she and Donnie were having an affair.
I think that's a reasonable thing to think.
What do you think?
At this point, yeah.
Now, in February of 91, Loretta told her oldest daughter that she had concerns that Donnie wasn't properly representing her in her lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
She had started to see that Donnie had been lying about the litigation about his personal contacts with important business contacts. In March, Donnie told Loretta that he had won her case. He predicted that she would get a large amount of money by the end of the month.
Sure.
String her along.
That's right. So he did show her a summary judgment in her favor, which was, it was actually stamped by a judge. But there were continual delays, and at one point he even told Loretta that he had cancer and was getting chemotherapy. This seems to be his old go-to.
There's our go-to excuse.
Yeah. He said that these treatments were delaying the execution of the judgment. Now, Loretta was a smart woman, right? So she was tired of Donnie.
Well, she couldn't have been too smart. She's still hanging out with this guy.
Well, by all accounts, he was charming, and a lot of people fell for it.
Okay.
So at least at this point, she was tired of his lies, and she reconciled with her husband, and she was getting very impatient with Donnie. She was calling his law office every day and asking about her money. And Donnie, of course, he assured her that the funds would be wired to her bank account. And, you know, just to be helpful, in the meantime, he gave her a check for $9,300 so that she could pay some of her bills while she's waiting. But there were insufficient funds in Donnie's account, and that check bounced.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Now, you think he'd know that and not write her a check for that amount?
Well, it seems like he did know this, but he would go ahead and write checks anyway. He would just kind of go by the seat of his pants, and I think this is part of the sociopath in him.
Do you think that there ever was a judgment? I mean, he had a judge's name stamped. Could he have forged that somehow?
Yes.
Ah.
I think he did, absolutely.
Okay. Because it's taken so long. I mean, if once it reaches that stage, it shouldn't be very long to get the money.
Right. No, he had been making things up again.
Okay. Bad boy.
Yep. But his lies were catching up with him, and Loretta told her husband that Donnie had promised the funds would arrive in her bank account the very next day. And Loretta's husband looked up the number for the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, the ARDC, and the couple decided that if the funds didn't arrive, that they would go ahead and file a formal complaint against Donnie. Now, the paper with the number to the ARDC was left on Loretta's kitchen counter, which will be important soon. Loretta spoke to her daughter that evening, and she told her that she was angry and fed up. If the money didn't come in the next morning, she was done with Donnie. So, Donnie went to Loretta's house early the next morning. We don't know what was said that morning, but shortly after he left, Loretta made calls to her bank to see if the funds had been received, and the bank told her that there was no record of any wire transfer.
Uh-huh.
So, Loretta began repeatedly calling Donnie's law office, demanding to talk to him. Of course, he didn't take the calls.
Right.
And she called her daughter again and told her that the money had not been wired. She told her daughter that Donnie was coming over and she was just going to have it out with him. She'd had enough.
And where's her husband? Is he at work or something?
He's at work, yep.
So, she's by herself in the house?
Yes. So, Donnie had his secretary cancel his afternoon appointments. And he told her that he did not feel well, and he was going home after lunch that day. Now, he left his office after lunch, but he didn't head home. He went to Loretta's condo, and he was driving his very ostentatious white car with the Mr. Condo license plates. It was a cold, rainy spring day. He was wearing a beret and a winter coat, along with his usual snakeskin boots. And he arrived at Loretta's condo around noontime.
Okay.
So, Stephanie, Loretta's daughter, called her mom that afternoon, and according to Stephanie, she asked her mom, "You're home, so that means Donnie didn't show up?" But Loretta avoided answering the question. She sounded strange to Stephanie. She asked Stephanie where she was, and Stephanie told Loretta, "I'm at school. Is he there?" Loretta avoided the question again. "Okay," Stephanie said, "you must not be able to talk. I'll call you when I get home from school." So Loretta hung up from that call without saying goodbye. And when Stephanie got home around 3:30 that afternoon, she immediately called her mom, and there was no answer. So she called over and over that afternoon, and of course she became more and more concerned.
Absolutely.
So Loretta was found lying in a pool of blood in the kitchen of her upscale Arlington Heights condo by her husband at around 7:30 p.m. that night. She'd been shot 4 times in the head at close range. There was no sign of a struggle or forced entry into the home. A neighbor reported hearing a sound like gunshots at around 3:20 p.m. Two other neighbors reported seeing a white car parking in the driveway and a strange-looking man with a briefcase entering the home. The neighbors also said they saw the white car leave around 3:30 p.m. It didn't take long for the Arlington Heights police to trace the car back to Donnie Rudd, of course.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
So murder is not a very common event in Arlington Heights.
Yeah, I
upscale wouldn't imagine. Community.
Right.
Loretta's murder was the top story on the 10 p.m. news. By the time the story aired, the police had identified Donnie as a person of interest and showed up at his home. So Donnie admitted to police that he had stopped at Loretta's condo earlier in the day to talk about a possible settlement in her case, but insisted that she was alive when he left. He said he had tea with her at the kitchen table and left around 3. Donnie granted the police a limited search of his home. Without a warrant from the police, he was able to choose where they could search. He was an avid gun collector, and he agreed that the police could take any gun in his home to check against the bullets lodged in Loretta's head.
Oh, that was nice of him.
Yeah, but he didn't divulge everything.
Well, no, right? Probably not.
They didn't have a warrant.
No, must have thought that he would look helpful if he let them do some searching as he allowed it, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a lawyer, so he probably had a pretty good idea of how these things work and what his rights were and stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he actually helped the police, Donnie did, by getting several boxes and checking each gun as it was put in the box to make sure it wasn't loaded. After piling multiple guns into the boxes, his hands were greasy with residue.
Oh, God, I remember reading this. This was funny, actually.
As he's wiping his hands clean, the police asked if he could take a gunpowder residue test to prove he had not recently fired a gun. Now, Donnie was anything but stupid, and he had actually written several articles on the validity of gunpowder residue tests while he was in law school. Donnie says, "I just handled more than 20 guns at your request." "Of course I can't take a gunpowder residue test. I have gunpowder all over my hands at this moment."
Jeez.
"But not from shooting a gun."
Now, see, that's really sneaky, but then at the same time, I think the police were, how stupid can you be?
I know.
To let him do that.
Well,
I don't get it.
I think they had enough evidence. He's admitted being there.
Yeah.
Witnesses saw him, or what sure described as him.
Sure did.
And his car.
Right.
I would have had a warrant in my hand.
Yeah, they really should have gotten a warrant before they went there, I would think. That was just stupid to do it that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's because this was a long time ago and things were not as, you know, they probably didn't have all the technology that they have now, the forensics and everything. But, I mean, just good old-fashioned police work to me would tell me that you don't do that. You get a warrant, you do it a certain way.
Good old-fashioned common sense would tell you that.
Right, exactly.
Jeez.
Yeah. Do you want to take a minute and tell me a little bit about, we're thinking he's a sociopath. That's what seems to be the diagnosis that would fit him, even though the only diagnoses he had that we know of during his lifetime he's had is the manic depression. That certainly doesn't tell us why he behaved the way he did.
No, it doesn't.
So.
Well, and neither does the diagnosis of sociopath.
No.
Tell you why he did it.
Well, okay.
it'll point some direction.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it's a very little bit.
Okay.
A sociopath can be defined as a person who has antisocial personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quick, easy one. This disorder is characterized by a disregard for the feelings of others, a lack of remorse or shame.
Well, he certainly had those.
Manipulative behavior.
Oh, my God. Well, this is describing him to a T.
Unchecked egocentricity and the ability to lie in order to achieve one's goals. Now, who does that describe?
Well, probably describes several people, but it certainly goes with what we're...
We're discussing Donnie.
Yes, it certainly does describe Donnie quite well.
Doesn't it?
So I wonder why the psychiatrist he went to didn't come up with that.
Well, I think there's lots of reasons. I mean, one was that he was in the jail as a convenience, so he wasn't going to be charged with anything further.
What do you
mean? Or in the hospital.
Oh, in the hospital.
He was doing that to avoid things, so he just needed a quick, convenient diagnosis.
Sure.
And he might have shown some manic depressive type stuff, some bipolar type stuff.
Well, I'm thinking he probably manipulated the psychiatrists.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah, because as horrible as he is, he does seem pretty clever.
He's not a dummy.
No, he seemed like he was quite clever. So, well, the police finally did get a search warrant, and Diane told police that she had remarried Donnie in Las Vegas about a year earlier. So her
Diane.
Yeah, but that made her belongings marital property, so those were searched as well, and many of her things were removed from the home along with Donnie's. So, in addition to taking a lot of Donnie's things to search, they were able to take whatever they wanted of hers because it was considered marital property.
Sure.
Now, she hadn't told her kids or anyone that they'd remarried until that point. So I don't know what it was, what that power he had over her. It's just really bizarre.
It is truly bizarre. And not just over her, over so many people.
That's true. It's not only her, but it just seems to be her for a long time that puts up with the most stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, he purportedly gave the clothes he'd been wearing the day of the murder to the police, but he later told detectives that he'd given the clothes to his attorney to hold. And one piece of evidence they found was that the police recovered remnants of the $9,300 check that he'd written to Loretta. It was actually ripped up and in his bedroom garbage can. So that was very suspicious.
Well, yeah, I mean, he said he admitted to being there.
Yes, but he didn't say anything about having the check.
No.
No.
But I don't know how harmful that is.
Okay. I thought it was. But yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean,
if he's saying he was there.
He could always say, I wrote the check, and then I realized after I wrote it, I didn't have sufficient funds to cover it, so I tore it up.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. Good point. So one eerie moment that was described by Diane's daughter was when she asked Donnie what was going on with Loretta's case. She said he didn't answer for a long time, but he sat smoking and blowing smoke rings, and finally he said to her, "Sometimes I'm not sure when I'm awake and when I'm dreaming." So, wow. That's just...
I think he needs to go back to the hospital.
I think he really has something that needs to be treated, and all these hospital visits are not for the right things.
Not at all.
So she didn't even know how to respond to that, but she found it really creepy, which I imagine it was.
Well, I'll bet it must have been really creepy just living with that guy. You're a teenager?
Oh, sure.
I mean, and I wonder if he was coming on to any of them.
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I think most of them were grown by the time this happened.
Yeah, I think at this point, but I wonder earlier.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm digressing.
Yeah, but I know.
He's just such a total creepy, sleazy person. It wouldn't surprise me that he was trying to make it with one of the kids.
No, I certainly wouldn't put it past him. And just a lot of the ways that he treats people, it's just, in addition to the lying, the manipulating, just his lack of concern for other people.
Yeah.
It's just devastating.
Well, as we said in the discussion of sociopathy.
Yeah.
A completely egocentric life.
That certainly would define him. More than anyone I've ever known in my life. I don't think I've known anyone that comes close to that.
No, not like that.
Mm-mm.
I mean, my ex-son-in-law kind of was like that, but not to that extent.
No, nowhere near. Come on.
Oh, he was pretty bad.
Well, he wasn't murdering or doing anything like that.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think he was.
But he was definitely egocentric.
Yes. But I think that this goes beyond that.
It does. And I'm just digressing again.
Yeah. So, after a police search of Donnie's office, he called to tell them that they had missed a gun. So, he had a .22 in his filing cabinet. The police returned to collect the gun. And this would have been concerning because it was a .22 that killed Loretta. But the gun had no connection to the murder, of course, because there's no way Donnie would have turned it in if he'd used it to kill Loretta. We know that.
Well, we think so.
And this was just a way for him to prove he was cooperating with the police.
Sure.
Just like everything else, it's all kind of a game to him. See what he can get away with, it seems like.
Right.
So he put together a public story about Loretta's murder that suited him and made him look better. Loretta's partner, he said, was connected with organized crime. She was shot with a .22, and that's what organized crime uses, he said.
And he would know.
He would know, because he was in the CIA.
Right.
Now, Loretta had lots of enemies. He also said she was just such a bitch, and maybe her husband did it, because they weren't getting along. So he would rant and rave about
what a
sweetheart. Who would have killed her and why.
Yeah.
Just to kind of keep it off, keep people not looking at him. And he actually said to Diane, you know, they can't pin this on me. So they haven't so far, so he may have been right.
Yeah, well, I guess they don't have the weapon, right?
No.
But they have witnesses that can place him in the condo.
Well, they have people that can place him there, but they have no proof that he did anything to her.
I know.
So that's the shaky part. So in 1993, Donnie's legal shenanigans caught up with him again. His wife, Diane Hart, was again there to pick up the pieces, though.
What happened this time?
Well, there was no way to preserve his law license at this point.
I guess not. He'd already been warned 700 times.
Right. So Diane decided it was time for him to leave Illinois. and investigations by the ARDC would have eventually led to disbarment. So to avoid testifying, Donnie saw psychiatrists in Illinois and Texas, and his official diagnosis again was manic depressive disorder. But Donnie really didn't see this diagnosis as real. He saw it just as an effective ploy to avoid accountability again.
Yeah, a means to an end.
Yeah. Now, at one point, he even inquired to the doctor as to whether a cancer diagnosis might be more effective than the manic depressive diagnosis.
Yeah, well, I've tried that.
Yeah, it worked before.
Yeah.
Right. This was really strange. Diane filed a petition for guardianship in the Texas courts and had herself appointed as Donnie's legal guardian.
For what grounds?
On the grounds of his mental incapacity because of his mental illness. And
I
this
see.
Was to protect him from all the things that he'd done, saying that it was due to his mental illness that he did these things.
Well, that's very clever.
It is clever. I would say that. So the ARDC disciplinary report issued in 1994, it was pretty damaging and brutal. In facing disbarment and further investigations, he was eventually allowed to strike his name from the Illinois roll of licensed attorneys. So instead of being disbarred, he was able to strike his name himself.
So that's like he relinquished his license or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was voluntary on his part. It wasn't punishment.
Exactly.
Good for him.
Yeah. So once again, he did lose his law license, but he walked away with not taking that much responsibility for what he'd done. If you look at it in the big picture, he'd certainly done a lot of things, and losing his law license was pretty minor compared to what could have happened to him and what would have happened to most people under those circumstances. I think that he got away with a lot more than most people would, for sure.
Way more.
Yeah. So he was never convicted of a crime. And he was released from claims against him by various bankruptcy filings that he did. But he was still under investigation for the murder of Loretta. So he's moved to Illinois. He's under investigation for Loretta's murder. He's not a lawyer anymore.
He lived in Illinois.
Oh, he's left Illinois, I mean.
Okay.
For Texas. I thought I said he'd left Illinois. So he did have to move away, and he is being investigated. But other than that, his life is pretty much untarnished.
So he's in Texas now. His wife, is she his wife or his ex-wife, or what the hell is she now?
Well, they remarried, right? So I think they're married now.
But then they divorced again, didn't they?
No, she divorced him the one time.
Okay.
They got married in Vegas, and then she divorced him to save the debts afterwards.
Right, yeah. And then they remarried after that?
I don't think so.
So, but they're a couple.
It's very confusing.
It is.
Yeah.
Who may or may not have been married at that point.
Sure.
But she's his guardian because of his mental incapacity.
Yes, she's his legal guardian, which is very weird.
It's too weird to talk about.
Yeah. But in 1995, he was hired as a fraud investigator for the federal government because he had no arrest.
Right.
He had a pretty much clean slate.
Talk about the fox in the hen house.
Yeah. Sadly, at this point, Diane was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And Donnie decided that he needs to plan for a life without her, because there goes his golden goose.
Right.
He needs to start planning what he's going to do when she dies, of course, because that's his priority.
Yes, it is.
And he, according to Diane's daughters, he began hounding her about her finances, about her insurance, immediately upon her diagnosis, as soon as they knew that it was a terminal diagnosis. He was after her. Now, the thing was...
Well, of course he is.
The thing was, a few years before that, Diane had had breast cancer, but it was node negative, it was stage 2, and she had a mastectomy, so she was thought to be okay. But then it comes back, and it's terminal. There is some suspicion that he may have done something to make it come back, or something like that, make it...
No.
Yeah.
And how would he have done that? Was he feeding her estrogen or something?
Yes. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what some of her kids think.
You have something to back this up.
I do have some stuff from the book, yeah.
Okay.
So according to Diane's daughters, he showed absolutely no compassion to Diane.
Yeah.
He actually wrote several emails to Diane, because Diane's in Illinois, he's in Texas, he's going back and forth. So they're not together full time, because she's trying to get things all straightened out there, and then she gets sick.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote lots of emails claiming his own illnesses, because he didn't like the attention on anyone else. So as soon as Diane was really ill, he started having all these supposed health problems.
Yes.
So he'd written to her with concerns about his illnesses, about the health insurance, and actually one of them, he claimed he was having his arm amputated. And he needed her help with insurance and copays because of this problem with his arm and it needing to be amputated and wanting to get a prosthesis. And if he didn't have the money to get the prosthesis right away, he wouldn't be able to get one. All this stuff. So as Diane lay dying, he sought and found another woman to take her place. And he began a relationship with this woman. She was a medical student in Houston. Ironically, she was planning on being a psychiatrist.
Yes.
Oh, that was funny.
But she didn't see through all this. Well, she did, eventually.
Eventually she did, yeah. While staying with her mother, Diane's youngest daughter borrowed a computer, and this computer was away in a bedroom closet. It had been Donnie's personal computer. So she's using the computer, and she's very disturbed that she finds these bookmarks. So she finds a bookmarking of several articles about estrogen. Here's what I'm telling you about, and its effect on breast cancer. He also bookmarked sites where hormone replacement vitamins and drugs could be purchased.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they asked Diane, and she said that she hadn't searched any of these sites. She knew nothing about it.
Yeah, but that was his personal computer.
Yeah. So it was clear that Donnie had been researching hormones and breast cancer, which is very suspicious. And the kids searched the house for any evidence of the hormone replacement drugs, but they couldn't find any. But that doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't mean he didn't give her anything.
Right.
Because at one point, Diane did tell her kids that she thought Donnie was putting something in her Gatorade. So whether this hastened her death or not, it seems like that's what he wanted to do. He was probably making an effort in that direction.
Right. I mean, that's actually a pretty clever way to do it, if you did that.
I guess. It's horrible.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
But would probably be difficult to detect or to prove that.
Well, yeah, because they couldn't prove it. But it certainly could have had an effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they asked Donnie about all this, he said that he thought that Diane was just trying to kill herself so that he could get her life insurance sooner. Not only is he all about himself, but he thinks Diane is. And in many ways, Diane did seem to be all about him.
Oh, for sure.
Which is really... I don't understand, I don't know, the psychological aspects of why she was that way. Do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. That might be something we should have looked up.
Well, there's probably some personality disorder in her to be willing to do everything she did.
Right.
But I'm not able to think of one.
Yeah, well, it seems like she was, like many women, she was terrified to be alone. And he had obviously won her over early in life with his... He was educated, he was charming, and he'd won her over back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for some reason, she just clung to that, even after he did all these horrible things and she found out so much about him.
She stuck with him.
Well, yeah, she definitely did. Less than 4 months after Diane died, Donnie married his Houston girlfriend. Now, he was 54, and she was 43, so not a huge age difference. The divorce file from the fourth divorce was very familiar to those who knew Donnie. So this marriage didn't last.
No, it lasted something like 9 months.
Yeah, you've got the time on that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not very long.
Not at all.
But, you know, he'd been dating her while he was married to Diane, and Diane was still alive and told her he was a widower.
Right.
So that's really scummy.
It is.
Yeah. So wife number four, she thought she'd married this smart, attentive, retired Chicago attorney who was a philanthropist,
right,
a war hero, and the recipient of 3 Purple Hearts. He had them framed and on his walls, actually.
Yeah, and he also told her that he had received the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Really?
For his service in the Vietnam War.
Holy cow.
So when she was filing for divorce, and she actually filed to annul the marriage.
Right.
Basically saying that most everything he had told her about his life was a lie.
Yeah, sure, so it was.
He didn't even fight in Vietnam.
No, and his years in undercover CIA operations were not real.
Not real.
Although they were mentioned in his Match.com profile.
And neither was he a philanthropist. He didn't have all the money that he told her he had.
Oh, God, no. Nowhere near.
Nope.
No. Now, in his Match.com profile, he was a widower, and he did not mention that his wife was not quite dead yet
when
he started dating her. Now, he claimed to own a petroleum company when he started dating wife number four named Rudd Petroleum. And he actually doctored bank statements to show that he had more than $6 million in wealth. And...
Too much.
Yeah. And ridiculously, he would show these bank statements to visitors when they came over.
Well, sure.
To show them how much wealth he had.
He's got to impress them.
Yeah. Craziness. I just don't understand how anyone could put up with that. But
no.
He must have been convincing. That's all I can say. Because this was a smart woman. This woman was no dummy.
The psychiatry resident?
Yeah.
The wife number four?
Right. Because she didn't put up with it for long.
No, she figured him out fairly quickly.
She
although
did.
I think she could have figured him out even sooner.
Well, probably if she'd done a background check. But I think that's more common now than it was in the late 90s.
So he, with all his money that he purportedly had, he pledged close to $1 million towards the elaborate church where his new in-laws were members.
Right.
And that's where the Donnie and wife number four were married.
Yeah, and this is kind of what led to the end of the marriage in an indirect way.
Of course, he didn't have the money.
No.
So he kept delaying until he was out of excuses, and then he faked having a stroke. That's pretty cool. So at the hospital...
Yeah, she actually found him lying on the floor, so he really faked the stroke big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did well. And wife number four, Mary Brett, would not let them do an MRI because of the shrapnel in his skull. Donnie's brother Ronnie was there. He says, Donnie was never in any war. Whoops.
Yeah.
So then she
blew
asked,
his cover there, didn't he?
Was he in the CIA? No to that either.
She must have felt like an idiot at that point.
So the house of cards he'd built up with this woman fell apart.
Sure.
She eventually won a petition for annulment of the marriage and a protective order for her safety.
Well, good for her. At least she did that once she knew.
But never one to be letting grass grow under his feet.
Yeah.
Donnie met wife number five on Match.com while he was still married to number four.
Well, you got to give him that. He's always planning ahead.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I guess he's in the process of getting a divorce or being divorced, and he's looking out and finding wife number five.
Right.
And on Match.com, he now had a PhD in his profile.
Right. And I don't have any proof that that isn't real, but it's very doubtful that he'd gotten a PhD in that time period.
The one place, where was it? It was some little blurb, some biotech blurb.
Oh, the profile of the executives.
The profile of the executives. And it says
that's
that
amazing.
He has a BS in chemical engineering from Texas A&M and a JD degree from Chicago Kent College.
So I think those two are true.
Right. And then... he also holds a PhD in bioscience and a doctor of science in bioengineering, but there's no mention of where those were obtained.
Yeah, I don't think those are real.
Those aren't real.
Which is amazing, because if I was to look at something like that, I would never think that that could be a lie. If I was to look up a site like that for an executive and it said those things, I would take it at face value.
Oh, you're very gullible then.
Well.
People do that all the time.
They do, sure.
So you need to have proper vetting.
Well, I just think if a guy is a lawyer and has a degree from Texas A&M in chemical engineering, you're kind of going to believe these other degrees because you're going to say, well, he has those two degrees.
He has those two.
So he's a smart guy. Why wouldn't he have more degrees?
Right.
Yeah.
So he's wooing and eventually marries wife number five.
Sure.
Who is not a wealthy woman, but here's the but.
Okay.
She had a son who was made a quadriplegic in a motorcycle accident. And she was the trustee of a large estate for his benefit.
Right.
So there's money to be made here.
Yeah, and of course, Donnie felt that he was the most appropriate trustee for this estate after marriage number five.
Yeah, so he should be the one managing the money.
Yeah, and in 2002, he was promoting himself as a biomedical expert. And that really paid off because he was hired by Regenetech. And right there, he morphed from a disgraced attorney to a stem cell researcher specializing in cancer research. Yeah. So I went online and looked at this, and there are actual radio interviews with Donnie about stem cell research, where if you just listen to that, you'd think, hey, this guy's an expert. It's amazing.
Well, nobody said he's not bright.
No. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Martin McNeil.
Yeah.
He was a similar type of guy. But this one's a little wackier.
This one's way wackier.
Yeah. Now, in 2005, Donnie published an article, and it was titled Regenetech Announces HIV Breakthrough. So according to this article, his work with stem cells had led to the ability to isolate molecules to prevent HIV transmission. So, wow.
Wow.
That would be a big feat, right? From a medical guy, would you say that would be a big thing to do?
He's cured AIDS.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's amazing.
So if he says...
How come we've never heard of this?
Right. Now, if he said he could isolate molecules to prevent it, does that mean vaccine to prevent it?
Well, some form of vaccine. I mean, he's going to introduce something that will identify the HIV cells and leave the normal cells alone.
Pretty amazing work by Donnie Rudd.
Sure is.
But Regenetech, in 2008, they finally saw the truth. But that's 3 years he got away with this. That's pretty remarkable. I couldn't do that.
No.
How did he fool these people? He must have been working with other scientists. It's just crazy. I'm impressed. If he wasn't so horrible, I'd be impressed. But he's horrible, so I'm not impressed. I'm disgusted. Yeah. But of course, in 2008, once Regenetech figured this out, another bout of lawsuits ensued against Donnie.
Here we go again.
Yeah. After a foreclosure on their home and multiple checks written with insufficient funds, wife number five was confronted with the real Donnie finally, and a divorce with her was in the works.
Poor Donnie.
Yeah, right.
He's going to be a five-time loser.
Yeah, right. But after investigating Loretta's death, the police began to focus on Noreen's death in the so-called car accident. So they'd been looking at Loretta's death for several years, speaking to people, and he was definitely their person of interest. But somehow that led them to turn their focus on to Noreen's death. I think once they heard about the car accident and those details, they probably thought, well, this is one way to get him because they really don't have any proof on the other one.
Right.
So in 2013, Noreen's body was exhumed and an autopsy was done. I don't know why it took until December 2015, but that's when he was formally charged with Noreen's murder. And he was extradited back to Chicago and his bail was set at $4 million.
Okay.
The last I heard about that was in July of this year, so I don't believe it's gone to trial yet.
But he's in jail.
But he's in jail. Yes, he's finally in jail, and I don't think he'll be getting out.
Unlikely.
Right. But another kind of funny slash disgusting thing is that when the police told Donnie he was being arrested for murder, his calm response was, which one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty chilling stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I think... Even as a non-psychiatrist, I could say he's a sociopath.
Yeah, I think pretty much anyone could probably say that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's to the extreme. And this case is very unusual.
It sure is.
And it's amazing. I was amazed I hadn't heard of it sooner.
The more stuff you hear, the more disbelieving it becomes.
Right.
And it's all true.
Yeah, but if you do a search of him on the internet, you're just as likely to find these praises, these paragraphs about all his accomplishments as you are to find anything about the murders.
He did a good job of promoting himself.
He certainly did, yeah. If it weren't for his arrest for that murder, there really wasn't much to go by in anything he'd ever done wrong. He seemed like a pretty successful, smart guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm not so sure they're going to be able to get a guilty verdict in the death of Noreen.
Really? Why?
Well, they can say that her... skull was bashed in with a rock, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
But he can still stick with his story and say she flew out of the car. She was unrestrained and boom, and hit her head.
Yeah, well, the windshield wasn't cracked or anything. She didn't go through the windshield.
She flew sideways.
How do you fly sideways out of a car and hit your head on a rock?
I don't know.
And then why would you be sitting there holding her across in your lap?
Right.
I mean, it's clear to me he killed her and then decided to drive out there And it's just amazing that he got away with that.
Yeah. But it's how many years ago? A long time.
It was 1973.
So over 40 years ago.
42, 43 years, yeah.
Yeah. So something that far in the past, I just don't know.
Well, we can only hope at this point.
We'll see.
That he will finally get what's coming to him. But at least he's locked up now.
He is.
So he can't hurt anyone now. Except people that are in jail with him.
Yeah, he'll get them to invest something.
Yeah, he'll probably have investors lined up.
Probably will.
Yeah. So, Dickie, I just want to take a minute to make a pitch for Team Tie Grabber.
All right, let's hear it.
So Team Tie Grabber is our homegrown podcast funding plan, and those of you who have already taken the plunge are in at the ground floor. and have been collecting your stickers, your coasters, and your snifters for the past couple of weeks. And I thank you. But those of you who are holding back, I understand. But if I was to tell you what Team Tigrabber currently offers and what our future plans are, you'd say, oh, right, yeah, something independent and free of commercialism such as this would surely cost me upwards of $50 a month, right?
At least.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a bargain, folks.
Right. But not so. And you'd say, $40 a month? And I'd say, no. And you'd say, okay, so it must be at least $25 a month.
And you'd still say,
no. And I'd still say, no. I'd say, you're not going to believe it, but for as little as $2 a month, you can count yourself among the revolutionaries. The revolutionaries who saw something different and became a part of it. Brave people. Now, Tigrabber isn't part of any institution or any corporation. We just podcast for the joy and the personal satisfaction that it brings us. So any contributions we get just go to financing the podcast itself. And your small monthly pledge can support the podcast, and it can help us avoid rampant commercialism.
Which we would dearly love to do. So that's a cause worth fighting.
Absolutely. Yeah. So True Crime Brewery is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And if you are kind enough to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that we would love to give you a shout out on one of our episodes. And do you have opinions on episodes, or do you want to recommend a crime, or even better yet, recommend a beer? You can email us at truecrimebrewery@tigrabber.com. Also, you can visit our website at www.tigrabber.com. Look us up on Facebook, too. Facebook.com/Tigrabber Podcasts. And lastly, but not least importantly, follow us on Twitter at Tigrabber Pods, because we're always posting what our future episodes are going to bring, and sometimes I even post what beer's coming up. So that's good stuff to know.
It would be.
Yep. So that does it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it.
I did.
Yeah. Well, that's important.
This is just an amazing story.
I thought it was a fun one to do.
Scary, but true.
Like I said, it's different than what we usually do, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, I want some more run-of-the-mill stuff.
This actually took a lot of time and research, though. Yeah, it did. But the book was a pleasure to read, so that was okay.
It was.
I have to remember to put that up on the show notes so people can read the book if they're interested.
Well, yeah, it's a good read.
It is a good read.
The ladies wrote a good story.
They did. There's a lot we didn't mention about their growing up with Donnie in their life, and just fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
And they ended up as very successful women, too, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll talk to you later.
Next time, folks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.